You're listening to audio from the Regenerate Podcast, a ministry of River City Church in Lewiston, Idaho. For more information about Regenerate, visit rivercitychurch.us.
Have a talk. So I think that what that innately means is, since I know most of you really well, we're just going to be super intimate about this and not be too formal. Hi, everybody. So I'm just going to sit down right away, because my plan was to do that about halfway through and like kind of chill.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to do like right now.
Yeah.
So first of all, Holy Spirit, I just pray that you guide us and that you teach us whatever you can from all these experiences, and make waves, make something happen. So Sam asked me to come up with like, what are you going to talk about? And it was pretty easy for me to just spit back an answer. I've gone to the Philippines twice now. The first time I went over there and married my longtime fiance, and it was fantastic. We had insane experience. Some of you guys probably saw the wedding pictures, and we were like, what the cheese? It was an insanely awesome wedding. I felt like Tom Cruise basically casting and filming his own movie about his own wedding. Because it was like epic adventure that was really cinematic, all at the same time. Mission Impossible accomplished. But then my mother-in-law happens to just run a group of churches casually. And she happens to be the leader of these 10 churches or whatever. There's like 7 of them, but they have multiple locations. So if you go to all the buildings, there's 10 buildings. So I think maybe there's 10 churches, maybe, I'm going to say. I don't know. But she just kind of was like, so you went to Bible school. That's cool. You're going to preach. And like just threw me up on the main stage like the first week I was there. And this year, the same thing happened. She was just like, oh, hey. Only last year was crazy because she sent me to funerals and birthday parties and everything. Cool. And it was fantastic. This year, my wife came back with me and we stayed here. And while she was here, you all got to meet her. And she and her and I intentionally said to ourselves, do we want to wait to have kids? I don't know if we do. Let's just see what happens. And she got pregnant. And then America was like, well, you have to send her back because she's not a full citizen yet. And we were like, cool. You know, we knew that was coming. But now she's pregnant and she went back to the Philippines. So when I went back this time, it was almost exactly a year since I'd been there first time. I knew I was going there to see my son get born. And that's just crazy, by the way. So... Again, of course, my mother-in-law decided to just make me go do as much Jesus stuff as possible while I was there. But I was pretty darn busy keeping my pregnant wife the way pregnant wives need to be taken care of. And then also, all of a sudden, we had a baby. So then it was like wives and babies that all need to be taken care of. And it was fantastic. But that's the summary. I don't think it was that exciting of a summary. I mean, I went over some stuff that sounded kind of cool, but I didn't say anything really fun yet, right? But the real thing is, behind all of that, behind like meeting my wife and waiting years to finally get married and dealing with COVID and finding a magical way to fly over and get married in a magical wedding, and then bringing her back here and then going back there again and being separated once again, and now we have a kid who is American and Filipino. Behind all of that is like a deeper reality where God promised me these things probably about 20 years ago. Probably it was around 2004, 2005 for sure that I got a really, really clear prophecy from a woman who came up to me, who's a ridiculously prophetic woman. She works at the church that I used to go to, Jubilee down in California. And she just started prophesying over me. And I've gotten a lot of little prophecies here and there, a lot of things where people spoke into my life, or God spoke to me, or I wrote down in my journal, or a verse really popped out and it feels like God's speaking. And I got a lot of that over the years. But this woman just came up to me and just was like, so this is what God says. And it's great because it was so clear. And it confirms with all these other things that I have that other people gave me and that God gave me. But her word's the easiest one to point out and said, God obviously said this and then he did it. And that's, I guess that's what I want to talk to you guys about tonight, is how stinking faithful God is and how he knows what's going on. He does have a plan. His plan is a lot more flexible than I think a lot of people want it to be. He is competent and able to make it happen. And he's going to do it with you. But it's going to happen, especially in as much as you obey him, listen to him, lean into what he's doing. You know what I mean? The John 14, it might be John 15, where he talks about, you know, abide in my love of the vine, you know, I'm the vine, you're the branches, those who listen to me and obey me, God's going to take care of them. I'm summarizing the entire chapter, and so it's not working, but God promised me a wife. That's pretty cool. And he told me that we would have a ministry together, and that her name would start with M, that she would be a lawyer, her address would start with one, that she would have dark curly hair, that we would share ministry together, that our children would credit us for knowing the Lord. And all those kind of sound like, I guess it's not a, it's like a, when God told me those things, it was a little bit more dramatic than when I just told you those things. First of all, I just burst into tears when God, he was like, you're going to be faithful to your wife your whole life. You're going to be faithful. And you're going to share ministry together. And by that point, I was already in tears. Like she had said that much of it and I was already crying. And part of that is because, as a young single guy trying to just like not mess up, trying to just like be faithful and not have nasty thoughts all the time and be attracted to pornography constantly, like as a guy just trying to not be a guy, it was really hard for me to believe that I was going to have like some solid marriage when I didn't know what I was doing and my self-control was pretty pathetic. And so when I heard, you know, you're going to be faithful to your wife and you guys are going to have a ministry together, I was already just like done. And it's also testimony of like how much God was moving when those words came. Cause for me to be that vulnerable to just blow up in public, you know? So it was a really powerful moment for me. And she goes on and she says these other things about what my wife's going to be like, how I'm going to recognize that it's her. And like the fact that our kids are going to know the Lord and they're going to accredit us for knowing the Lord. And so I'm in, all of a sudden, I mean, I literally went like almost 20 more years without any evidence of a wife, right? And I'm about three or four years ago, I'm building a house up in Lenore and I pick up a piece of sheeting and I hold it in my arm and I lift it with my armpit because it's the weirdest way to hold the sheeting you can possibly do. And I hoist it with my hip and I start walking. And right then the Holy Spirit says, and he talks funny because it's like he doesn't use complete sentences, but he uses whole paragraphs all at the same time. When I was like your guys' age, he taught me about how he's my provider. And we went through this period of time where he was like, I'm gonna teach you who I am. Okay. And he introduced to me like Jehovah Jireh, Jehovah Nissi, like the different concepts of his names in the Hebrew. And provider and supplier were two different names. Okay, that's interesting. And he's like, I'm gonna show you. And so he took me through these three stages of providing for me. And I actually can't remember all the details, but I remember the second stage was, if I didn't pray about it, I didn't get the money. If I didn't ask him first before I did something, I wouldn't have the sponsorship and I would be in a world of hurt and I'd have to go to him and be like, can you release the funds because I'm in trouble? So what would happen is I had these bills and other random occurrences in life, like maybe you get a speeding ticket or maybe electricity costs more this month. But most of your bills are pretty, you know, what they're going to be. And you're purposely spending this much money on food and no more. And you control all these things. But then there's stuff you just can't control. And when I would go to work, whatever I earned was exactly what I needed to the penny for 6 months straight. Like, not like I spent everything God gave me and therefore God provided for me. And like, it wasn't like, yeah, hey, I blew all my money and wow, God provided exactly what I needed. It was like I would have a plan, everything would go awry, and I would need 11 more dollars, and my boss would call and be like, can you work a half an hour more? Kind of thing. Like I would always get, and it was to the penny. It was like supernaturally freaking me out. Only it wasn't, because God straight up told me it was going to happen. He was like, you're going to go into a season where I'm going to show you what it's like for me to be your provider. And for six consecutive months, it was just like God was doing the whole like accountant control freak version of being my provider. And he was showing me that he had complete sovereignty over all things to every single penny that came across every opportunity that I got from anyone. He had to release it or he could hold it back. Like he was sovereign over everything that happened in my life. And then he said, are you ready? I'm going to change it. And I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And overnight, he switched to providing for me in a different way. Suddenly, every job site I went to, someone would be like, hey, do you want a pair of shoes? These were given to us, or I ordered these and I got these instead. And they just told us to keep them. But I'm not size 9.5. I don't know anyone who is. Are you size 9.5? I'm like, actually, I am size 9.5. Yes, that's thank you. I needed some shoes. And I just started getting, and this actually lasted for a couple of years. It wasn't just a couple of months. I literally just stopped buying things because God, and then there's that verse in the Bible, like, don't worry about don't worry about the things that the world worries about. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about that. Hey, I'm going to need an apartment soon. I just found out I'm going to have to move. Okay, well, I'm not going to worry about it because I'm just going to get a phone call and someone's going to say, hey, do you want to be my roommate? Because that's the season of life I was in. That was 100%. My job was just to literally not do it. So I literally didn't buy clothing for 10 years. Like until I moved back. And what happened honestly was I got bored. And I asked God, I'm like, can I buy my own clothes? I haven't like picked something for myself for a really long time. But I wasn't even getting used clothes. I was getting like new stuff. I wasn't like, and I had a rule. I couldn't tell anyone about it. Because, you know, if you tell people like, yeah, I just wear whatever God gives me, you know for sure some grandma's going to feel sorry for you and be like, oh, that poor child, he doesn't have any clothing. I better give him something. So the rule is no one can know. Otherwise, it's not God, right? And so I couldn't tell anybody about it until that season was over, honestly. And so I had some awesome, awesome things happen. I had a friend who was a model. And he would always go and get these awesome modeling jobs. And they would like, oh, this clothing's from our last season. Can you just take it, please? Or, oh, this clothing didn't make it to the shelves. It's not even going to be sold. Like, we took all these pictures of you. But then it turns out that the lucky brand decided to discontinue this and never made it to the store. So we have to get rid of this clothing. So can you just take a whole bunch? And so he would have way too much clothing all the time. It was like stuff that you can't get anywhere. That I could never afford. And he would call me and be like, man, I got too much clothes again. Can you come help me? I'm like, sure, sure. I'll, I'll, I'll wear stuff that a professional model wears, I guess. I'm sorry that I have to do that. Like, that was like, that was my life for like a series of years. He just provided for me in a, like, in kind of a financially, but also just in like more practically, just what I needed when I needed it. And during that season, God taught me what my job was when I went to go get a job, because obviously I don't need to have a job. When God sends me to go do something, I don't actually have to have a job, but God wanted me to have a job. It wasn't cool to just sit at home and like not have a purpose. It wasn't cool to not be part of society. It wasn't cool to not be productive. It wasn't cool to like he put you here and you're supposed to be a part of this world. Like, you're in the world, but you're not of the world. So God provides for us through our job, but when we're Christians, he's providing for us, not our job. And so when I don't have a job, my job is to go look for a job and know that I don't have to stress about it. God will provide. I just have to be diligent and be faithful with what I have, right? I just need to go and be like, oh, I'm gonna turn in. If I don't have a job, my job is to, for 8 hours a day, look for a job. But I don't have to stress about it, because in the end, every single time, God's the one who actually opens the door. I'll apply to all these jobs and I'll do all these things. And some randomly, I'll meet somebody in a grocery store parking lot that'll be like, oh, I need help putting this cart away. Oh, thank you so much for that. That's amazing. You know, my son's looking for someone who has a job that you'd be perfect for. And like, oh, it's with pushing carts? Like, no, it's a computer programmer. What? How did you know I do that? Like that's a story that I made up. That's not a real example, honestly, because I can't remember the real examples. But I just look at my journal. But it was always like God would open a door. And when I opened my first corporation, the same thing happened. God opened a door. He kind of told me, hey, it's time to do your own thing. And then every single one of my clients for the first year, especially the first 6 months, was overtly supernatural. First of all of their names for the first 6 months were named Mary. I got a word that God said, Mary has a job for you. And I was like, oh, okay, that'll be my next job, is Mary. No, all of my clients were named Mary. God was like, I'm doing something and I want you to understand it. It's me. Do you get it? You're kind of deaf, so let me say it really loud. Everyone was named Mary. So I have all these people in my Rolodex named Mary. They're all from the first year of my corporation. Because he was telling me, I got clients for you, and they're mine, and they're, and that taught me another lesson, to take care of those people because God gave them to me, right? That's a sideline. What I'm getting back to, though, when he told me that he was my provider, he taught me in depth that he was my provider. Like this long, long lesson that seemed like I was rabbit trailing just now, but I'm getting back to something. When I picked up that sheet and started walking, he said, hey, you know that I'm your provider. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, so, and you know what to do if you don't have work, right? Yeah, that I'll just do I'll do my part and then you'll end up actually doing it. And he's like, yeah, so why would it be any different with a wife? Bam, drop the mic. I dropped the sheet and I'm like, I've been single for a long time. I was about to turn 40, or was I like turning 39? I was stinking old. And I had gone through multiple colleges, at ministry school, college here, and never had anybody. I mean, my goal in life was just to not sleep with people. Like, it was just like, try to be celibate. Try not to be a jerk. Try to just be a good person. Like, just don't use people for their bodies. Like, you get to the point where you've been single for so long that you kind of start to think stupid thoughts. And that was one of my biggest struggles, was just trying to be a good, pure person when I was in a desert of intimacy. And then all of a sudden, God's like, gives me this obvious advice that I should have understood 20 years ago. He's like, so why would it be different with a wife? And I was like, wait. In the past, when I'd looked for a wife, I didn't feel like he was jiving with it. Like, I like tried to have a wife, and he's like, bro, you're trying. What's going on? Like, it just wasn't healthy, you know? But for some reason, I had the green light to go look for a wife. And so I did. And that's what's so crazy about my wife. Name starts with M. She has dark, curly hair. She's a lawyer. And her address starts with one. Like the like everything. I already had prophecies from like 15 years ago about details about her that would guide me. But somehow, when I found her, I didn't find her with those. I just confirmed her with those. I just went out and started dating people and doubled my focus on trying to be pure, because that was one of the reasons why I didn't date a lot, is because when you hang out with people, they're like, let's touch. And you're like, oh, darn it. Right? So trying to stay pure in a world that genuinely doesn't even value that was really, really hard, because your body wants these things and you have to fight against your own self to even be successful. And so at some point, and that's not even part of the lesson, I'm just saying that because it's real. But God brings me this wife the same way he brought me everything else. I did my part and then he brought her into me at the right time. And in truth, it's beautiful, because when I went on all those stupid dates, I learned how to date. And I learned how to go, okay, that's scary, don't touch that. Okay, and maybe, and I learned how to have a little bit of self-control, and I learned how to check in with people that I was accountable to. And I got ready basically to meet my wife. And right at the time where I was finally starting to jive with this, like, how do you go on dates thing, all of a sudden there's this girl that shows up on my dating app in Spokane that's not supposed to be there because I'm in Lewiston. Why am I getting a Spokane ping? We both thought it was funny and we just laughed about it and made some comments. And we noticed we were both Jesus freaks, so we made some Jesus freak comments, and she was hilarious. And so I kept talking to her. A couple months later, I'm still texting this girl while going out on dates with other people that are, you know, actual options, because some foreigner who's only going to be here for a couple months, who's in Spokane, isn't a good option. I'm not going to entertain this. I might talk to her though. You know, she's funny. Well, pretty soon we decided that we should probably meet and I should probably go up to Spokane and visit her, because she doesn't even drive. She's from a country where they don't have driver's licenses, so she can't come down here. And long story short, we fell in love, and then I had to like figure out what to do about the fact that I was totally in love with the chick that's headed back to a foreign country, and we decided to go ahead and get married. But one of the reasons why we decided and why it went so quick was because the Holy Spirit really did lead me to go, this is an okay thing. You're in an okay place. It's going fast, and that's usually really a bad sign, but you're checking in with me and everything's lining up. And I talked to people, and no one, I mean, I talked to my parents. I talked to, did I talk to you guys? I can't remember if I like 100% checked in with you. I know I did with Largent and Lori. And like, and every time I like, hey, so, you know, I've been dating this girl for only this long, and we're kind of getting serious, and I want to ask her to marry me. No one freaked out, which is insane, because they all should have. But I think everyone kind of got the same vibe, and we were just chill with it. So when I went to the Philippines this last time to watch my son get born, the second time in a row, 1 year apart, I literally just went both times to just collect my promises. I just went there to collect the things God had been promising me. You're going to have a ministry with your wife. You guys are going to be faithful to each other. Your kids are going to know the Lord, and they're going to accredit you for knowing the Lord. And these are some of the promises that we know we have. And I just went there and just harvested after 20 years of just trying to be a good guy. And honestly, I say trying to be a good guy because I can't, like, if I went back in time and David Letterman interviewed me, because I don't really care about the new guys. I'd rather be interviewed by David Letterman. Like, if I went back in time and David Letterman interviewed me, I couldn't get up there and be like, yeah, I've been 100% amazing. I've never messed up. I've been a Christian. It was hard for me to be celibate. And I made it out of there with some scraps and some scrapes. Like, I came way too close way too often. And a couple times I genuinely took a couple hits And when I say hits, I mean it, because it messes with your faith, it messes with your confidence, it messes with like it's when you fail at obeying God, it's not just him that suffers, you suffer. And I wish that I had a better record. In some ways, I'm super stoked because I know what I did, compared to what I could have done. And I'm kind of proud of myself. But in other ways, I'm like, no, I'm not going to say that, because I genuinely could have had a spotless record because he was there to help me. And sometimes I just didn't let him help me. Sometimes I was just way too carnal and I let myself focus on the wrong things. And it cost me. I mean, that's a reward in heaven. I can't, that's a badge I will never be able to walk around with, you know. I was almost faithful for 20 years. That's what I can say. It's a win, but it's not the full victory. And that does hurt. Especially it hurts now that I'm married, because having to tell my wife, who's a total virgin and totally did win, that I have kissed other women and entertained the idea of other women and all kinds of other things is really painful for her. And it created a barrier of intimacy that we've had to overcome, and honestly wasn't fair for her. And I can only imagine how much harder it would have been had I just given in to what the world says is okay. This is a way off subject. The only reason why I harp on it so much is because, duh, you guys are college students, so you're literally living through it right now. But like, yeah, like I was there, and I was there for 20 stinking years, so I know what it's like. And when I went down to the Philippines, God was just like, hey, want to have some adventure? Hey, do you want to preach to people you don't know? Hey, do you want to have an interpreter, because you want to preach the gospel through an interpreter? Hey, let's go to an army base, and let's just like, the army base is going to like, I've got to go to an army base. And these are like basically their version of the Green Beret Navy SEALs. This is like the elite team. And they're like, they open doors, right? Like my mother-in-law is like the Mother Teresa of the Philippines. Her name is Irene, but no one calls her Irene because everyone calls her Nanay. Nanay means mother. She is a mother to her whole community. Everyone knows her as Mom. And it's like her official name there. And so there's these military guys who go out and they fight, you know, guerrilla warfare, because people randomly decide to try to take over the government there. And they fight other random stuff. And they really genuinely, there was an assassination on the island that we were on. Did you guys hear about it? It's like world news everywhere else. But this one of the governor of the island that I was on was assassinated when I was there. And they came in. These people came in, and I don't know, look it up on the internet if you want to see gross stuff, because lots of people died. And they just came in with machine guns and just started shooting everybody at a public meeting. And the target was the governor, but there were like 17 people wounded and like 19 people killed or something. It was really bad. And these guys that I was talking to were the ones that had to deal with that. They're the guys that have to go chase those guys and catch them and do something about it. And they called Nanai because they were having spiritual warfare. They were having serious spiritual warfare, and they were like, something's up. So we need to call Nanai. And she just being her, she's like, Charles, you're going to speak. And I'm like, why me? They called you. And so she did. She spoke, and she encouraged them. And then she said, Charles, pray for him. And here's what's crazy is when somebody like that hands you the mic, everybody just assumes that you're awesome. Everyone just assumes it's like, oh, this guy knows what he's doing. Like, and so I got to preach with total authority and pray with total authority. And I've got these dudes that literally risk their lives. And many in that unit have died in the last 4 years. It's not like this is like a safe job. These guys know what it's like to lose a brother in battle. And we prayed about the spiritual warfare that they were going through. And they got really real with me about why each one of them went to their captain and said, Captain, something's up. We need covering. And a lot of these guys are Catholic, which is even bigger because there's a huge Catholic population there. 7% Christian, 2% born again Christian in the Philippines in general. Other than that, it's mostly Catholic. And then the second big thing is Muslim. And so when the born-again Christian leader from the community gets invited out, and the cool thing is, because it's such a spiritual country, the soldiers have their own, no one is ashamed to pray. they don't struggle with that like we do. They do struggle with having too much religion because they have Mary and all that kind of stuff still folded into their culture. But they were willing to open their hearts to this evangelical concept. And that, and the two funerals, and the one birthday party, and the 22 sermons that I gave over the 2 years, is just testament of God saying, I know you wanted to go places. I know you've been wanting to speak my word. I know you've been wanting to like make a difference for me. And here it is. In a lot of ways, I'm not equipped at all. I mean, you guys can kind of tell by like just this meeting, right? I'm handling this like no one else has ever handled a small group, right? Right? Like I don't know how to show and tell. I don't have any. I'm not any good at presumptuous anything. And so, when God puts me on stage, what is he thinking? You know what I mean? But he just did it over and over and over and over again. In some ways, I'm sure he's just teaching me how to do it with a group of people that are gracious enough that they are like, oh, well, you know, first of all, when you're from a different country, you can get away with anything because whatever you do that's weird, they just assume is because you're from a different country, right? Yeah. Like if I'm a bad speaker, they're like, oh, Americans are boring. Yeah. Like it's great. Like it's actually genuinely great. If I'm not funny, they just go, I don't get American humor. I don't understand it. And so you have this grace to just kind of learn and just be yourself and figure it out. And people are going to assume the best. And that's the world God gave me. He let me, I've been just going there and harvesting promises, harvesting opportunities to learn, which brings me to my conclusion. The lesson, by the way, this whole time, is just God's faithful. But the end cap of the lesson is we're the body of Christ. We're the church. We're the people that are called to go out there and make it happen. We're the people that are going to go and do the things that Jesus did, right? We're the ones, when somebody dies, we're the ones that go and pray for them. Like, right? Like, we're not looking for somebody more equipped than us. We're looking to them and we're honoring them and we're listening to them. But in general, no matter what he puts in front of us, we're the ones called because he put it in front of us. Yeah. And so I don't know what I'm doing. I went to ministry school. Honestly, when you get up and talk to people or when you're praying for the sick, or when somebody whose eyes don't work walk up to you and say, I want prayer, because they're so full of faith and you're an American, so they assume that you're just epic, right? Oh, this dude speaks one language. I should go. Everyone there speaks like four, so I'm like an idiot to them, but they don't notice that for some reason. These people that are highly competent but don't realize how competent they are because our culture is the best culture, they come up to me and they go, oh, help me, American. And I'm like, awesome. But here's the thing. The people there that come up to you for prayer are the ones actually full of faith. And so my honor is to them, because us white guys here in America haven't been walking up to anybody asking for prayer, especially when we're blind or missing a leg or something. These guys are like, yeah, I'm missing a leg. Can I get prayer? Americans don't even think like that. And so it's fantastically beautiful to see people that are pulling on God in that such a way that God can step in through whoever's willing. And that is our call. It's not about you. It's about him. You're not big enough to ruin God's day. Don't be so arrogant. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like thinking that we're too small is the same pride as thinking that we're too big. It's still us thinking that we're something bigger than what God can handle. And so no matter where he takes us, no matter where he sends us, where we're going, whether it's the Philippines or the 7-Eleven, or we don't have a 7-Eleven here, but let's say the gas station, like wherever we're going to be going, hanging out like little tiny baby, tiny small people, or like graphic designing, or going to WSU, or wherever we're headed, the college that Jeremy Camp went to, wherever we're headed, God's God. And there's people who need his word, and there's people who need his love, and there's places where we can go. As often as you can, bring the gospel into the situation. But the other challenge is this. Recognize that sometimes that has nothing to do with saying the gospel out loud. Sometimes it has to do with dying to self so people can see what it's like for someone to die for somebody else. Sometimes it means loving somebody that nobody else will love because everybody in the room has never seen that before. And it's you're called to it. And it's really about embracing the fact that if you gave your life to Jesus, that you gave your life to Jesus. I'm an employer. And so on a daily basis, I wonder this thing. I wonder, so you signed up to go to work. Didn't you think there'd be some work involved? Like, people constantly act like I'm insane for asking them to do something, you know? But they want to work and they want to get paid. But when I give them work, they're like, oh man, I have to work. I'm like, work is going to be work sometimes. Like, sometimes work is work. It's crazy, I know, but believe me, right? And for some reason, everybody thinks it's going to be like, you know, a coffee break. As a Christian, we kind of do the same thing. I gave my life to Jesus. At some point, that's going to mean that you gave your life to Jesus. And if you died on the cross with Christ, that means that you died on the cross with Christ. And all the things that you're worried about and all the things that hold you back and all the reasons why people being mean to you isn't fair has been erased. They've been erased and they don't exist. You are transcendent. You've already overcome those things through Christ. Now, learning how to walk in that is the next step. And so take care of the kids and go to college with all your heart and study your theology and do your internship while knowing that your real calling is to raise the dead, heal the sick, preach the good news, and love each other in a way that proves that you know Jesus. You know what I mean? Go and preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words. There's a great quote for that example. And so now, let's have small group. And so, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this week's sermon from the Regenerate Podcast. And if you enjoyed our content, please feel free to subscribe. If you have any questions or would like to send us feedback, send us an email at regeneratelcse@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Regenerate, changing the world for Jesus, one person at a time.